It's emotions that sink you and evidence that saves you. So today on part three, we're talking about the evidence. Welcome to Hat Chats. Welcome to Hat Chats. This is Michelle Baker, your host, and I'm so happy to have you joining me here again today. I hope that you are coming in from one of the other episodes of this series. This is part three in a series, and so to jump in on part three, it'd be slightly lost. So I hope you can listen to part one and part two of Emotions That Sink You, Evidence That Saves You. And this is the last part of my journey that we're talking about in selling on Etsy and what I learned, how to really wrangle my emotions back under control and make my decisions based a little more on less emotional information and much more quantifiable data. And that doesn't sound like an artist talking, right? It doesn't sound like an artist talking at all. Quantifiable data. I sound very serious. But what made me realize I needed to change my methods was a book that I'm going to highly recommend and highly quote in this episode. And it's called The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur by Mike Michalowicz. And first of all, it's one of those books that it's not particularly long, but it is so packed with so many great little nuggets of information and methods that you can apply. My copy is just, it looks like a rainbow unicorn bled all over it. It's so highlighted and marked up. And so I do recommend the book. And I'm going to dig into one section in particular, which is the metrics. But I want to give you a quick overview of how this book approaches the overall thought of a business plan, because I think that's another thing that as creatives, I know for me, the idea of creating a business plan has always been sort of like, well, what do you mean? I'm a freelancer. I create stuff. I make stuff. Sometimes I sell products. Sometimes I do services. And so a business plan seemed like a big bowl of spaghetti that was very slippery and just like, how would I really, you know, it's not like I'm trying to build some big formal corporation. It's a different sort of a beast. And I didn't think that a business plan really applied to me. I wasn't going after any big bank loans. I didn't feel like I needed to prove anything in documentation. And I mean, I like to try to think that I like to be organized, but I wasn't being as organized as I thought I was. And the book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, helped me realize why that was so. And the approach that's given to creating a business plan in this book is a lot more friendly to, I think, a creative type of brain. There are many, many examples that he goes into with different business models. And so that's pretty cool because you can see how flexible this approach to sort of making a business form light version, you know, like a easier and much more digestible business plan. It can be done in a versatile way. It can be done that can be applied to a lot of different businesses. And it can be done in a way that you don't spend a few weeks like trying to create a 100-page document that you finally finish up, put in a nice big binder, and never look at again. What you create with this approach is a much more living, breathing document that's going to impact you daily, literally. You will use it every day, and it will help you keep your navigation of what you're doing under control. The reason he calls the book The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, it's written with a really kind of lighthearted tone, and I like that too because it's just, you can kind of giggle a little bit. And it's poised as, you know, what are you going to do to clean up your business even if you're at the end of your role? So like the analogy is you're on the toilet and finished up your business and you have three sheets to deal with. And so the whole tone of the book is, how are you going to make these three sheets work for you? How are you going to be resourceful? What are you going to do with it? And in the end, after all the fun little analogies and things. In the end, the three sheets that we're really looking at in running a business are a prosperity plan, a quarterly plan, and daily metrics. And I'll define quickly what he talks about with the first two. The daily metrics is what we're really here to dig into, because daily metrics is something that's going to be, I think, wildly different for whatever different business you do, whatever kind of thing you're running. But it starts with a prosperity plan, and I think that's a really critical part that people need to look at when they're kind of getting into whatever it is they're getting into. And like I said, I kind of looked at my world as, well, you know, I'm a freelancer, and I do services, and I do some products, and I sell stuff on Etsy, and I do, you know, this and that and the other thing, and how is that really going to be a business plan? Well, somewhere in there, there's got to be a foundational core of what you're doing, or else you really will be all over the map. You will be saying yes to weird jobs that are taking you in directions that you don't want to go. And if you don't define for yourself where you want to go, then it will get defined for you. And it's a lot cooler if you can define your own destination. So the first part is knowing what your core foundational beliefs are, kind of figuring out what your limiting beliefs are too. Like, what's holding you back? What do you think you can't do? Or what do you know you don't want to do? And what are the reasons for that? Are there certain niches or genres or you know, kinds of people that you do not want to work with for whatever your reasons may be? And who's your dream client, or who's your dream customer? Or what's your dream in general? What can you envision? And what can you just see and focus on the beliefs that enable you and empower you that, yeah, you know, that feels right. That's what I'm going for. That's what I want to be doing. And you define that. You really, really clearly, crisply write that out so that you can communicate that to yourself and to others when needed. It helps you to create your boundaries. It helps you to sort of formulate the little zone, the little lane that you want to stay in and really excel at. So it's more about thinking about what's your why, what's your reason, what's your purpose of doing what you're doing, and then making sure that things are aligning with it. So that's really important to kind of touch base with that, or else you'll find yourself sort of just in a state of reactivity all the time and feeling upset about things that aren't happening, or maybe that are happening, because it's all just happening to you. And with no navigation, it's all just happening to you. And that's not a very it's not a very empowering position to be in your own business, obviously. The other thing that is recommended is creating a prosperity plan. So, of course, this is the part where we get to take, okay, the things you like, the things you love, things you're good at and you're interested in, and turn that into prosperity, which is money. So creating a prosperity plan, it's your second sheet, and that's a statement to the world about, you know, how you're going to stay true to the core values that you've figured out, that you're defining. And this was tricky for me. I had to sort of read this section a few times, because this is not the how-to, like step-by-step, okay, you know, I'm going to make all these dreams come true exactly this way. It's not about exactly how you plan to pull off these things realistically. It's more of like a life mission perspective. And it's how you're going to stay true to them in a broader sense, because what this approach to business planning is doing is it's being realistic in that life is going to change things on you all the time. Just you can sit there and try to define in great, great detail what your everyday schedule is going to look like to implement all these things and make your dreams come true. But then life's going to throw you this, and then it's going to throw you that, and it's not going to work out on a daily micromanaging level. So the prosperity plan is more about seeing that you have a destination and knowing very clearly what the destination is, and then understanding that you're going to have to be adjusting your sales to get to that destination pretty often. So it's like, go, 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 go. Okay, evaluate. How are we doing? A little bit of an adjustment here. We have to maybe change something up. And what comes out of that is the prosperity plan is a precursor to it, but it comes down to having a quarterly plan. And a quarterly plan is going to be where you get a little more tactical. So the prosperity plan's like, okay, I have this high level dream, the destination, the goal that I can really say to people, you know, when people get you at a cocktail party and they're like, oh, what do you do? What does your business do? Maybe you can at least get a high level sentence out or two, but it's your quarterly plan that's going to be, okay, this is how it's all going to shape up. And the quarterly plan is, what are you going to accomplish over the next 90 days to cover the most ground toward that destination? Quarterly, even within your quarter, even within your 90 days, you'll be changing and changing as you go. And it goes into how to focus on having goals and then breaking them down into specific, measurable, attainable, responsible, and time-specific ways to actually get things done. You go from the visionary, purposeful, full of feeling kind of thing to boil that down a little further into, this is my destination. It's still a little bit vague, not vague, but the actual getting there is going to be a little bit hazy, might be cloudy some days, don't always see exactly what we have to do. And then your quarterly plan says, here is what is going to happen in 90 days. Don't try to plan out the next 5 years in great detail. I mean, planning out 90 days in great detail can be enough of a challenge. And the understanding with this approach is that these are goals that you can at least set and track. And they say tack, uses the like a sailing metaphor a lot. So you go, 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 adjust the sails, go, 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 adjust the sails. And that, you know, makes a lot of sense to me because there are just a lot of variables, I think, in running your own business, in responding to different seasonal markets, maybe that you're dealing with, different popularity of trends. And as we go through this, what we're coming up on now is, dun, 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 this is the highlight of the episode here, is the metrics. And this was the heart of everything for me that made me start to realize, you know, when we talk metrics, it's really not, I'm not talking about accounting. Okay, the money coming in and the money going out, sure, that's absolutely something we want to know, okay? But this is not a lesson on how to do QuickBooks or how to do your accounting. This is more, how do we drive a business without letting it drive us, without letting it drive us crazy or drive us to tears? And so with daily metrics, what you're looking for is 3, 4, 5 of the most critical numbers that you can review in your business every day. If I was talking to 12 different people right now, I think that, I mean, if they're all creatives, if they're all Etsy shop sellers, you're going to hear a lot of the same ones. But even within that, you would hear different numbers, different things that would be more important to some people than others in their particular business. One example that was given in the book was some type of company that would do something completely different than what any of us would be doing. But their call volume, like sales, their salespeople and the phones ringing, literally they could tell by the number of phone calls being answered how many customer conversions they were likely to have. So if you could get good at predicting how many customer conversions you're going to have just because you know that they took in 1,500 phone calls that day, that is a metric that was something really quantifiable for them. My business isn't like that, so that's obviously not a number that I would look at. The numbers that I found myself needing to look at in my own business, I will go through, and maybe some of these will give you some ideas in yours, and also you'll hopefully think of some in your business that are outside of what I'm giving here, because I don't have a lot of inventory to track, for example, in my business. So something along the lines of inventory might be a really important number for you, but it's not something I use. So take this, you know, with a grain of salt, but a balance sheet, first of all, balance sheet is basically your money coming in, your money going out. You should have an idea of that at all times. But that being said, I'm not talking about you running your finances to the penny every single day. That's time consuming. I don't have time to do that every day. But if every day I pay at least 2 minutes of attention to that, literally 2 minutes, right? How much time are you spending on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, right? More than 2 minutes. You can figure out in 2 minutes, probably, where you're at, financially speaking, on a day-to-day-to-day level. For me, it's a matter of I can open up my bank statement online and keep my business all separate from personal. So that helps me keep it very clean, you know, so I can see, okay, this is the balance that I have. My credit card for my business is linked right in there. So I can see, okay, this is what I have in the bank. This is what I owe on the credit card. So, you know, pretend that money's not in the bank account right now. And then I think outside of what's not showing up there yet. Do I have any outstanding checks? Did I pay any contractors? And do I have any ads running? Because those will sneak up on you if you're running Facebook ads or Pinterest ads, something like that. Keep that in mind too. What was your budget for them? Because it, you know, tomorrow you may be $75 more in the hole. Just have that on your radar. Have that on your metrics sheet that you're tracking. Then, right within, if you're an Etsy seller, going into my Etsy shop, sure, I like to every day check out what are my visits, what are my views, is anyone, you know, coming into my store, and how many dollars in sales am I getting. But as those are important, okay, because of course that's a part of your sales number, and it shows you some of your information. But I have found, you know, especially recently, it was a few months ago, Etsy's dashboard changed a little bit, and you can see at a glance much more easily your conversion rate. That's a really important number, I find. If you have a conversion rate that is low and you want to bring that up, that's something that you want to really pay attention to and figure out. If you have all these visits and views, but no one's buying, your conversion rate is telling you, you know, they're coming and they're looking, but they're leaving. And I mean, that's a really easy thing to do. It is the internet. Everything that you could dream of is literally a couple of clicks away. So having someone come in your store and see stuff is very good. It's nice to see higher traffic numbers than lower, but it doesn't tell the whole story. I mean, if they're not buying, you need to dig a little deeper. How come they're not buying? Is it your price? Is it the quality? Is it just the photos don't look appealing enough? And so there's work to be done there if the conversion rate is slipping. And then the other thing that's been probably the most critical number or information that I've gained in my Etsy shop is looking at all the traffic sources. We spend a lot of time, or I do, I spend a lot of time marketing, using different methods of social media. And that's great because you can sort of track how people are finding you. So use that, because if you're spending all your time and energy and effort talking to people on Instagram and you're all excited because you have thousands of followers on Instagram and none of them are clicking in to actually buy your products, well, you know, that might not be the best use of your time or effort. For years, it was Pinterest that was bringing in over 80% of my traffic. And then there was a huge shift. A few things happened. One of them is I just finally really buckled down on my SEO and my findability within Etsy, and the search engine within Etsy really improved. So that went up. But my Pinterest traffic, I found, was dropping a lot. Now, I think upon investigating, I have a couple of theories, and they're not super proven. I'm still really actually trying to prove these right now. But it looks to me like Pinterest is harder to get organic reach now. It's a lot more of a pay-to-play model than it was 2 or 3 years ago. So I do still use it, and I do still pay to promote certain pins. And sure enough, no surprise, they perform way better. This is a segue right into Pinterest, where those are the top things that I look for in Etsy. I look at my visits and views, I look at my sales, but it's my conversion rate and my traffic sources that I really want to know what's going on there. So tracking those numbers is important to me. But segueing into Pinterest, Pinterest is very useful if you're set up as a business on Pinterest and you can get the analytics, because you can also see what are your best Pinterest boards. And so by building a good following there and getting good analytics, you can really kind of see for real for yourself what's trending and what's trending that's relevant to you. You know, if people are, there are a lot of things trending in the world that have nothing to do with your business, right? But if you have a collection of Pinterest boards that are somehow related to the kinds of things that you create or sell, you know, if it's a home decor type of industry that you're in, or if it's baby items, these are ways with Pinterest you can get a nice clear view of what's trending and what people are clicking on and actually saving or clicking through to. So that's been revealing to me that some of the things I have are downward trending in fashion, and that's completely expected. This wasn't something that surprised me. So now what I'm doing with this information is I have a few guesses at what I think is going to be some of the next trends, and I go and I build boards, and I really fill out those boards with all this other stuff that it's not even my stuff. I'm just filling them out with really congruent looks and designs and products and beautiful photography, and I'm seeing how is that performing. Am I right? Is that going to be an upward trend? Next from there, I use a application called eRank, and that helps you look at what's trending for keywords. So if you have a hunch about what's going to be on trend, but you don't want to spend the next year just producing a whole bunch of products and designs around it and only to be wrong, one of the most solid ways to predict those trends is by looking at eRank and looking at Pinterest and seeing, hey, are other people thinking the same way you're thinking? Is it worth maybe doing a little bit of the adjusting the sales to some of your products and some of your offerings to make them be something that people are searching for? And so metrics, for me, the other thing that has been a big one is I mentioned earlier in this podcast that I do freelancing. So some of my stuff is service-oriented. Some of it is selling of products. Some of it's selling personalized products. Some of it's as-is products. Some of it is print-on-demand, and I just make royalties off of those. And with all these different eggs in different baskets, I found it really helpful for me to keep a spreadsheet that's very simple, but it shows me on a day-to-day basis what my sales revenue was for each of those streams of revenue. That way, I can kind of look and see where I am as far as passive income. Well, I say passive income. It's really semi-passive, I think, is as close as we get to it. It's passive income is kind of something that's not really relevant to something that you're still micromanaging to some level. If you're posting designs and you're creating designs and you're doing something daily, I call it semi-passive. But I like to see those numbers, and I like to have a better idea of where am I spending my time and my energy and for what revenue, because that can really go off balance sometimes. It can go off balance because you're hoping for something to be true or because you're working so hard at something, it feels like it must be doing good. And, you know, it's the numbers that are going to tell you, yeah, it's really not as strong as you think it is. Or it might surprise you and you might say, oh my gosh, that's, you know what, that it really is worth doing. And that really is worth having that, you know, print on demand shop or whatever it is. Because look at that. I had to do not a lot of work last month and, you know, got this amount of revenue. Not bad. So that will show you at a glance. It will keep you a little more in line with what your sales goals are. And some of those things, I think we have more control over than others. Some of the sites out there, sure, you want to drive traffic and you want to hit your sales numbers, but there are only certain elements that we can control to drive those sales. And if you have the information soon enough, then you can say, okay, you know what needs to happen? I have got to pick up the phone, call those two clients, follow up, see what they need, convince them they need something, whatever it is. You need to sort of push that sales side a little bit more, or the numbers are just going to happen to you. And again, having your business just happen to you is probably the last thing you want in a business plan. So one last thing that you might want to track too that I thought of is if you're doing email campaigns. Email campaigns give us a lot of information. If you have a funnel at all that you are able to talk directly to your customers and send them coupons or send them a cool little update, here's what's going on. When you see, first of all, that, hey, not many of them are bouncing back. This is a pretty good list. I only had like three that bounced or something. And then you see, only half of the people opened it. Well, you know, that's interesting. Or you see, wow, had like a 90% open rate. That was good. That must have been a nice title. You know, I must have really been intriguing with that one. Whereas if your same audience that you're used to emailing isn't opening it, did you send it on a bad day? Was it a, you know, should you not be sending it out at 4 o'clock on a Friday? You know, click throughs and open rates will tell you a lot about better ways that you can communicate with your audience. So when we're talking metrics, these are the things that have changed my business. These are the things that have made me realize you can make decisions based on all of these different things, like, oh, nobody's opening my emails and nobody's coming into my website from Instagram. But it's a lot more, it makes a lot more sense to make those decisions when you see the numbers supporting that. And it's not just a really over-emotional, moody hunch, you know? So I'm hoping that you will grab your own copy of The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. Not that I get a cut of this. I just really think it is one of those books that definitely had a really lasting impact on my business. I read and reread it all the time, just in short segments, the parts that I need to be reminded of. And I hope that you'll consider a little bit more about your metrics in your business so that you can set up a system for yourself, whether it's a spreadsheet or a few screen captures. Sometimes I'll do a screen capture here and there and just save those screen captures into a folder so that you have the information to look back on, because being in this type of a business, the more data you can collect and have over the long run, the better. Januaries are dead for me, and that used to freak me out, and now it's fine because that's what the numbers show. January is not busy. This is the time for me to catch up on all the other things and use that to my advantage. So even when the numbers aren't telling you what you think you want to hear or see, you can use that to your advantage and use that as some form of peace, and know that just because people are maybe in other Etsy shops that you're seeing on Etsy groups and forums are doing really, really well and crushing it on a given week or a month, if you know that for you that's always been sort of a downtime, don't worry about it so much. Just keep going toward the destination. If you think of a way that you can adjust the sales, sales meaning like S-A-I-L-S, but literally, if you can adjust the sales too and get your sales revenue a little bit higher, great. And if you can't, then focus on the next few weeks ahead and prepare for them so that you can knock it out of the park at that point. But it's the data that's going to save you. It's the data and the evidence that's going to show you, look, this is how it always is, or yeah, something's really strange here. You need to go digging and figure out what happened. Why did it drop off? What's going on? So thank you again so much for listening to Hat Chats. I'm your host, Michelle Baker, and I hope that this will help you in your business to be reactive only on your own terms and not just letting it all happen to you. Hat Chats.